Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on this November the 29th, 2018. It'll be the only November 29th we'll have this year. And I'm joined by, did I tell my name? Did I, Fred?
The announcer did.
Oh, the announcer, okay. Yeah. Anyway, I'm Tim, the aforementioned, and Ed Vitagliano is here with me. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Fred serves as news director for American Family Radio News and OneNewsNow.com. You got a good team over there helping you out, don't you?
Have a wonderful team. Yeah. Guys, dedicated Christian journalists.
Yeah. And OneNewsNow.com. Tell folks what that is and why they should.
OneNewsNow.com, for the most part, is takes the scripts that our reporters put together for radio news, and they put it into a print form. And you can go to OneNewsNow.com, and if you go over to the right-hand side of that, you can sign up for our daily email where you get one email per day, that's all, Monday through Friday, and we give you a list of the latest stories, stories primarily from our reporters who give the news from a Christian perspective, the latest in the pro-life side of things, latest on national security, all of those, church business, that kind of thing. But we also include stories, breaking news from around the world that day, and some video news. So it's a multimedia type email that you get each day. And as I say, we promise we only give you one email a day, but it's giving you news, and that's why the news service was created. Everybody knows the mainstream media where they're coming from, a far left ideology, and they do it without apology. Those guys do. The news service was created for Christians, for people who listen to American Family Radio, who support the American Family Association, so you can have a trusted news source. And I tell you what, being in the business now for over 40 years, I had some visitors in my office yesterday and talking about my first 20 years in the business. You know, there was professionalism in journalism at one time. Well, if you were a news journalist, your boss said, I don't want your opinion in this news story. If it is, the news story doesn't make it on the air. Now, they want the reporter's opinion, the reporter's bias, up front and center in the news. And for the most part—
In the news, that's the key thing. Yes. I don't know, none of us mind and actually enjoy opinion shows.
Sure.
But one of which is this one.
Right.
Now, we try to view everything through a Christian worldview, but at the same time, we give opinions sometimes that differ even here. So opinion shows are part of the American political discussion as well, but you're talking about
news stories,
things that posed as straight news,
yes,
which are what President Trump calls fake news, right?
Fake news, and that's what he talks about. It's not news when it's really the reporter's opinion
right,
and how they feel about the president.
Like Jim Acosta from CNN, any doubt which side he's on?
Right.
And he's supposed to be the straight-up White House anchor.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, OneNewsNow.com.
Yes, sir.
Get subscribed there, folks. Once a day, you'll get the news sent to you from OneNewsNow.com.
And it's free.
All right, lots to talk about today. Once again, President Trump is cowering. It's just getting embarrassing. This guy has no
spine whatsoever.
No spine. Won't just hide under his desk.
I wish he did express his opinion.
Won't express his opinion. You don't know where he stands. I'm reading a headline, Fred. I know you wanted to talk about this. And it talks about how it's from the New York Post. And the New York Post is it's like the New York Times. Been around.
It's a little bit more of a conservative.
Tabloid type, right? A little bit more conservative, but more of a.
It does have some tabloid aspects.
It's got the celebrity stuff in there,
yes,
too.
Yes, their Page Six is, like you said, tabloid-ish.
Yeah. But they still got a lot of hard news. And they interviewed President Trump about the Democrats coming after him when Nancy Pelosi takes over the House in January with all kind of subpoenas and investigations and stuff. And
trying to gum up his last couple of years.
He was asked office. About that. And how did he respond, Fred?
Well, he threatens to declassify information about some of his Democrat friends. In other words, if you think you're going to make my life miserable, I'll make your life miserable.
Oh, it's not in other words, Fred. I'll quote you what the president said in response to this idea of harassment. Quote, if they go down the presidential harassment track, they being Nancy Pelosi and the mm-hmm. Democrats, mm-hmm. now back to the quote.
Little Adam Schiff.
If they want to go and harass the president, so he switched to third person right here, and the administration, I think, continuing to quote President Trump, I think that would be the best thing that would happen to me. I'm a counterpuncher. And I will hit them so hard, they'd never been hit like that, end of quote. He said during a 36-minute Oval Office sit-down. So
he said he could declassify FISA warrant applications and other documents from Robert Mueller's probe, which I'm surprised have not been declassified at this point anyway. And he predicted that the disclosure would expose the FBI, the Justice Department, and the Clinton campaign as being in cahoots to set him up.
Yep. He'll do it.
I believe
that. Oh, he will.
He'll do it.
Yeah. I believe he would do it, and I believe that's what happened.
Oh, that is what? Oh, I absolutely believe. Yeah.
Oh, the Democrats have been fighting this. Adam Schiff, Democrat right. Adam Schiff.
What is he calling?
He sits on the Intelligence Committee.
Okay.
Little Adam Schiff. That's what the president refers to. But Adam Schiff, they have been fighting any publication or disclosure of the FISA applications.
Right.
Because it reveals that the corrupted Justice Department under Barack Obama used the Justice Department against then-candidate Donald Trump.
In collusion with the Clinton campaign.
Yes.
I have no doubt that that is what happened.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that he has not had let that come out yet, I think personally this has been an ace up his sleeve. He's just waiting for the right time to lower the boom.
Yeah,
so I have very little doubt that that is exactly what happened.
So you want to
rumble?
You want to rumble? Just be ready because
President
Trump says I'm going to hit you harder.
I think if you thought the first 2 years of the Trump administration was interesting, the next 2 years, him going after the Democrats who now control the House.
And he went on to say, this interview we're talking about, 36-minute Oval Office sit-down with the New York Post. He said, I think that would help my campaign, talking about really declassifying these documents. If they want to play tough, I will do it. They will see how devastating those pages are.
Right.
And that's why people like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because
ding, in this corner.
That's right. So you want to throw a punch?
Yeah.
I can throw a punch too.
All right.
I like it. I mean, it's like, we've said he has his flaws, many flaws, okay? But he's like Charles Bronson, Clint Eastwood, and John Wayne all rolled up into one when it comes to slugging it out in an alleyway behind the congressional building.
Right.
You know, some of us are at the rally that President Trump had in Tupelo on Monday.
Yes, some of us were. I know, I wasn't. Okay, go ahead. That was very sly.
Well, I'm a news guy. Stick to the facts. But at one point in his speech, he said, "I'm not a politician." You know what you think? I'm not a politician, and the crowd loved it. He said, "Oh, praise God! You know, you're not a politician." And he said, "I still won the first time I ran for."
I want to know what do you call that accent right there that you're doing?
Was it that's a Canadian pretend trying to be a New Yorker.
Canadian hybrid. Try bad. To I can't like do it the way.
What are you looking at?
You got it down more.
All right. So.
All right. To the news of the hour,
uh-huh.
The President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen. Now, remember, he was lawyer for businessman Donald Trump for many years. Michael Cohen made a surprise appearance in a federal court in New York this morning and pled guilty to lying to Congress about work he did on an aborted project to build a Trump Tower in Russia. Now, I'm not going to read the whole story, but basically...
Oh, please, do.
Oh, no. But I am going to play you some Donald Trump reaction to all of this. Basically, Donald Trump, businessman Donald Trump, going back prior to 2016, had started negotiations or talks about building a tower in Moscow. He was a businessman. That's what he does. But it got to 2016, January, and by then he had declared that he was going to run for president, and he decided to pull the plug on the project. There was a discrepancy between what Michael Cohen told the intelligence, U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, about the timing of pulling the plug and when it actually happened. So Cohen, who's facing a lot of pressure because in August, you remember Cohen pleaded guilty to other federal charges involving his taxi business, bank fraud. All right, nothing to do with Donald Trump.
Right.
But Mueller, I think the picture we're getting has been putting the thumb on Michael Cohen and all part of the Mueller investigation. So this morning he pleads guilty. The president is leaving the White House this morning, and as he often does, he's on his way down to Buenos Aires, Argentina, for a G20 meeting. So he talks to reporters outside about what Michael Cohen has just done in the New York courtroom. The president does not like Michael Cohen. In fact, during this morning's questioning of the president, he referred to Michael Cohen as a bum and a weak person, end quote. All right. So we have a little clip of then a reporter asking President Trump, why did you hire Michael Cohen if you think he is a bum? Here's the president.
If Cohen is such a bum, why did you hire him, have him on your payroll for 12 years, and have him do so much of your dirty work?
Because a long time ago, he did me a favor. A long time ago, he did me a favor. No, not at all. Not at all. I'm not worried at all about him. You just take a look at his written document. Go back. Take a look at what he wrote in, I think, January. He has a written statement, and that's the fact.
All right, so there he's responding to questions about Michael Cohen, his former lawyer. And he's basically saying, I pulled the plug on the project because I was going to run for president, and I didn't want any conflicts. But, you know, I think you're going to see more of this kind of thing. Michael Cohen is trying to stay out of prison after right. pleading guilty to those earlier charges for things nothing to do with President Trump. And now there's an attempt to say, we got you. But this all happened, remember, in early 2016, before Donald Trump became president.
Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I was just going to say, the big problem for Michael Cohen and thus for Robert Mueller, I think. Now, we don't know everything Robert Mueller may have up his sleeve. We don't know what's going on in his mind in terms of the direction he's headed with this federal investigation, this special prosecutor's special counsel's investigation. But here's, just on the surface, what looks like the problem for Michael Cohen. Okay, so you are charged with all these crimes, nothing to do with Donald Trump. Now you have admitted to lying to Congress, okay? So when are you going to be charged with lying to Robert Mueller?
Mm.
Okay, so how do we know you're not lying now? Mm. That's the problem for Michael Cohen. He's trying to keep his head out of the noose, so to speak, on these other criminal charges. It looks like he's willing to do and say anything to stay out of prison, which means maybe he is willing to say and do anything, including lie,
mm-hmm.
because now he is admitted to lying to Congress.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a problem for Robert Mueller. It seems, and we had this discussion before the show began, it seems to me all Robert Mueller has is he has found people around President Trump that he can either squeeze on their own on matters related to their own misconduct, or he can get them in for hours upon hours, question them about things that they've said, emails that they've sent, and then when they can't remember and they say one thing and they go and check and find out, no, that wasn't the email on, you know, February 12th, it was March, Then they say, you lied. You lied to federal prosecutors. Mm-hmm. Now we're charging you with perjury. And it seems to me that's all Mueller has.
Yeah. Which is why the president's current lawyer, one of his current lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, has been advising the president all along, do not sit down with Robert Mueller.
Right.
Because of the threat. And even Alan Dershowitz has said this in interviews on Fox, the Harvard, Harvard law professor who's a liberal. He said the worst thing the president could do is sit down with Robert Mueller.
It's a perjury trap.
Perjury trap.
Yeah.
They're trying to do the gotcha moment.
Let me just briefly explain, in case I wasn't clear. If I'm a federal prosecutor and I have you sit down, Fred, and I say, would you have for lunch 3 months ago on the third Wednesday of the month, and you look through your schedule and you think, well, I went out with Susie, my wife. I think we went to Wendy's, and instead you were in Memphis for lunch. You just got the days mixed up. You lied.
Yep.
You perjured yourself.
Yep.
Right. And now we believe anything you say?
And if you want to stay out of, you don't want to be charged with perjury, give me something on President Trump, something that you know we want.
Yep.
That's why Jerome Corsi, who's also kind of on the hot seat, has said, this is what, he said, I'm not lying. I'm not lying for Robert Mueller in his investigation of the president.
How long has Robert Mueller been going now?
Almost 2 years.
Yeah, I think it was, it'll be 2 years this spring, May, I think, or April.
So at least 18 months.
Yeah. But now a lot of this stuff started informally just after the election, or maybe the summer just before the election, where people were making accusations about collusion.
But the FISA court stuff started during the election campaign.
Yes, in the summer.
When it started to look like Donald Trump might actually become president.
Right.
There were plans put in place using the dossier to go to the FISA court, not telling the FISA court judge or judges that the document that was being used as alleged proof by the DOJ came from the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Yes, which her campaign paid for, paid through this intermediary, Steele, paid Russians.
That's the real crime.
That's the real collusion.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, and we'll move on from this topic, which I know people can't get enough of. But let me ask you this, Ed. When you get into this 18 months now of Robert Mueller and his team of lawyers going searching everybody and kind of like going through a house and going through every drawer and looking under the cabinet and, you know, now you're unscrewing the plumbing to make sure they didn't stuff anything down there.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for some kind of evidence, what is this? What do they have to get to here? What are they trying to get to? You kind of sort of get lost on why they ever started this stuff in the first place. What is Robert Mueller after President Trump about that he could put him in jail?
Well, in fact, all this talk about collusion, we've said on this show many times, that if you're talking about getting evidence, getting dirt on your political opponent and going to the Russians to get it, there's nothing illegal about that. The whole implication has been he colluded with the Russians to get information on Hillary Clinton's campaign. That's not illegal. What they have accused him of that would be illegal if it happened, but there's no evidence that it did, is if he called the Russians, I mean, you know, Vladimir Putin, and said, hey, would you break into the Democratic National Committee and get information, see if you can hack into the DNC and find dirt or John Podesta. And that has never even entered into the discussion of being a provable charge. You know, this is one of those things where the DNC wouldn't even let the FBI investigate to see who hacked in to their...
Why wouldn't you?
Obviously, because... I'm guessing. I don't know. I think you'd handle it yourself because you want to control the information. If the FBI finds out that it wasn't the Russians, that it was somebody else that hacked into the DNC or John Podesta's group and got his email.
Where his password was password?
Where his password was password, then you can't imply anything about Trump because the FBI says, no, it wasn't the Russians. It was somebody else. And the DNC wanted to control that information. This is crooked, but it's not crooked as far as I can tell from the Trump campaign. It's crooked the other way. Mm-hmm. The Obama administration and the Clinton campaign.
It just seems like the eternal special prosecutor that doesn't have anything to sustain. I mean, 18 months of unlimited resources, 18 months or more of the whole liberal media world with all their investigative resources.
Yeah.
And all you got is...
You got Michael Cohen.
A couple of tax evasions.
Roger Stone, Jerome Corsi are the only names being thrown around right now. I think the Mueller investigation has nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I've said before, in my opinion, the liberal media, as much as they hate Donald Trump, they would have found out about some kind of illegal activity between the Russians and President Trump long before Robert Mueller would have. In my opinion, they'd have been tipped off by somebody. I mean, as many enemies as President Trump has. Mm-hmm. Shoot.
If it's illegal to try to get dirt on your political opponent from the Russians, then Hillary Clinton should be going to prison.
Right.
Because they're the ones who paid the money that got the information from the Steele dossier, which proved to be fabricated.
That's why President Trump sent out the meme with all the Democratic leaders behind bars saying, when are the investigators going to start against them?
Right.
Exactly.
So you're listening to today's issues. Now, what is this? By the way, if you want to watch the show today, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. If you want to join us video streaming the show, our show here, go to YouTube or Facebook and type in today's issues, and you can do it there. And you can also get the articles that we're discussing. We're posting them on the Facebook page, interact with other listeners. We invite you to join us on Facebook or YouTube. Now, next story, Fred.
Yeah, let's go down to the border, our southern border, where the migrants are getting very frustrated because, unlike the plan, they are not getting across the border. What we're finding out is that there's at least 600 of these migrants now have been identified by authorities as criminal, having criminal records. We're also finding out this morning that a number of these people have diseases such as tuberculosis. But then there was one particular interview, and this was done by Fox with one of the, I believe he's from Honduras, one of the migrants who speaks pretty good English. And he was interviewed by Fox, and I want you to listen to what he had to say. The first word out of his mouth is they, because it's a little bit garbled here. But the first word out of his mouth is they. He's getting very frustrated because their plan to get into the United States is not working. Cut number one.
They lied to us from the beginning. So most of these people are disappointed, you know, and getting frustrated at the time. So as you can see, every day that passes, it's more and more people that are coming. So there's going to be a point break where they're just going to say, let's rush in there, you know.
He said they lied. Who's they? That told me right off the bat there was a plan. This was all planned. This wasn't individual families from Honduras or El Salvador.
Who decided, hey, let's go to the good old USA.
No, there was somebody who orchestrated all of this to try to make President Trump look bad.
Right.
They're frustrated because President Trump's plan to protect our border is working. That's what they're frustrated about. Some of them have decided to go home already.
Yeah. Mexico
is deporting some.
Yeah.
They're frustrated at that because President Trump's plan is working. He's securing the border.
I got to say, I'm shocked that it's working. I really am.
Me too.
I didn't think he'd be able to keep them out.
Mm-hmm. Me either. Now, there's one caveat to that. We'll be back in a minute with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
I think I've got a
stumper
for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
Yeah, it's funny now.
But put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is. Dum, 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 dum,
dum, dum, dum. But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, the popularity of our spiritual heritage tours each year continues to grow. Those are our tours to Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips, but a lot of folks go on both of them. But the popularity continues to grow, and we sell out 2 or 3 months in advance every year. So we're letting you know when our June and September tours are. Just go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com. There's two tours. There's one to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, and then there's a separate trip, but they're back-to-back to Washington, D.C., and to George Washington's Mount Vernon. So, if you want to go on those tours with us, just go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com, and check out all the info.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. Something very unusual happened the other day at Sandy Valley Baptist Church in Warner Robins, Georgia. The men of the church gave about 80 families envelopes filled with cash. Some had $100, others as much as $1,000. There was also a note inside with a simple instruction, "Find a way to bless someone." And that's just what they did. One family bought a bunch of blankets and gloves for homeless folks. Some pooled their money together to help pay medical bills for a fellow church member going through chemo. Another member tipped their waitress $500. C.J. Holmes spoke to Fox News on behalf of the men's group. He said about 14 guys raised all the money that was given away. Said they had all been individually blessed and they wanted to do something to bless others. And it's fair to say, as a result of their kind-hearted spirit, Warner Robins, Georgia, was showered with blessings. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Fred Jackson. If you want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net is our email address. Our website is simply afr.net. Afr.net. We're going to be here for another hour, bringing you the news of the day. Fred, Tim, and Ed, we'll have Steve Jordahl join us at 5 after the hour. We have a guest now, don't we, Ed?
Yes. We're very happy to introduce to our listening audience Daniel Weiss, who is founder and president of the Brushfires Foundation. And we'll discuss what that group is and why we're having Daniel on. But Daniel, welcome to Today's Issues.
Well, thanks, Ed and Tim. It's so great to be on your show today.
Well, tell us a little bit about Brushfires Foundation and the important, very important report that you guys have released.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the first question we always get is, what is the Brushfires Foundation? What's that name about? And we took our name from a quote from one of our founding fathers, Sam Adams, who said, "It doesn't take a majority to prevail, but a tireless minority set keen on setting brush fires of freedom in people's minds." And that's really what we think we're trying to do here, is set real brush fires of freedom in people's minds, especially in the church. And we're focused particularly on helping churches and Christian leaders and lay leaders have a better more Christ-like engagement on issues of sexuality. We want to help the church understand how to respond to many of the cultural, social challenges of the day, and how to do so while being tied to Christ and Scripture in ways that some churches have departed. We want to keep churches upholding the historic Christian teaching on these things. So that's a little bit about our ministry, and so we're working to equip the church. And one of the ways we're trying to do that is through a series of reports that we are releasing based on some research that Barna Group, a national survey company, did for us and our project partners, including AFA. So we're looking at how pastors in particular are responding to sexual challenges that are being presented to them by members of their congregations or members of their own staff.
Well, Daniel, I don't think there's any question that one of the biggest challenges for the church in America over the next 10 to 20 years is going to be this issue of sexuality, and I'd say sexuality / gender. These are issues that are going to be a direct challenge to the freedom of the church to operate, but it is also true that it is a challenge to many of the people inside the church who are struggling with these issues. And a lot of Christians and a lot of pastors have not really known how to handle these issues. So tell our listeners a little bit about what your report thus far and through the surveys from Barna have discovered about these issues of sexuality inside the church.
Yeah, well, you said it so well. I think that these are becoming issues that we are facing already, and we're going to continue to face. Sexual issues touch so many other areas of life because ultimately they're not just about our behaviors. They're really about our identity. And so when we are confused about who we are as a people, and yes, even God's people, even strong believers can find themselves confused about these issues, a lot of other parts of life begin to fall apart. And we see that in our society, in our culture at large, but we also see it in the home. And many of us have encountered friends and family that have struggled with this, or we've struggled with this personally. So what we did, and we have a large body of research that we conducted, and we're releasing these reports in bite-sized chunks. So the first report we released, it found that over the course of the year, first let me tell you, we surveyed over 400 senior pastors in America from all different denominations, excluding the Catholic Church, but Protestant denominations. And what they found was 80% of pastors have been approached by someone in their congregation or on their staff with a trouble or a struggle related to sexuality. And breaking that down a little bit, 3 in 4 pastors have handled pornography-related questions, so we know that's a big issue they're dealing with. And 80% have dealt with an issue of infidelity. So these sexual issues are actually rather common in the church, and I think that we're a little bit afraid to talk about that. But we need to start talking about that sexual brokenness is impacting the culture, and it's also impacting the church. And just a couple other stats here, and then I'll pause for a second, but 7 in 10 pastors are approached several times a year or more. And again, when you think about the issues that we're talking about, deeply personal, sometimes very shameful issues, the fact that so many pastors are being approached several times a year, and that could be once a month or more for some of those pastors. In fact, about a fifth of them are approached once a month or more by a member of their congregation. So we're really seeing the results of the research show that these are issues pastors are dealing with right now. And we also found that many of them do not feel all that, they don't think they're very qualified, in their own words, to handle some of these.
We're talking with Daniel Weiss, who's founder and president of the Brush Fires Foundation. We're discussing the recent release of a report on sexual dysfunction and sexual challenges within the church, how pastors are responding. And Daniel, one of the things that seems clear is that the church is oftentimes kind of slow on the uptake, and we're oftentimes behind the culture in what we are willing to discuss. And I'm thinking that your report, and just from other articles and things that we've read here and discussions, that pastors are hesitant to deal with these very controversial and troubling issues. But why? Why are Christians not talking about issues of sexuality? Why do pastors hesitate to discuss this, or hesitate to bring in people who can minister on this issue that's a real challenge to people in the church oftentimes?
Well, that's a great question, and it's really the one we need to answer, and answer quickly, because so many people are struggling with sexuality issues, whether it's confusion about their gender identity, or infidelity or pornography use. We just know these are huge issues in our culture and in our churches today. One of the reasons I think we aren't talking about this is because many of our pastors, you and me and many others, listeners, have grown up in a culture where the church, in a sense, didn't feel the need to talk about these issues. I think it should have been, but it wasn't, because culturally, until, we started to see changes in the sexual revolution, but those didn't really take hold of the mainstream culture until maybe the 80s, 90s, certainly the 2000s. Now we're in the 2010s. And over the last 40, 50, 60 years, we've seen a wholesale shift in our society, but the church still operates as if it's in the 1950s or 60s. And I would argue that the church of today exists in a culture that far more closely resembles first and second century world rather than the late 20th century world. I think that things we're seeing in our culture now are very much resemble some of the practices and the attitudes and beliefs of the Roman world at the time the church was forming. And so there was a lot of sexual licentiousness. There was a lot of predatory sexuality and rape and abuse in those times, and that's the crucible in which the church formed. And sexual purity was a huge part of what Paul and other apostles were writing about when they wrote to these Christian communities in various cities. So I think we go back to the gospel and the epistle writers and scripture there in the New Testament, and we have a great deal of guidance for what the church can be doing. We just need to embrace the challenge as a church, as a people. And I believe that we will not only see reform in our churches, we could see reform in our culture as well as the church comes along on this.
Daniel, let our listeners know where they can go to read more, to find out more about the Brush Fires Foundation, maybe to find out some of this information that we've been discussing today.
Yes, you can go to our website. It's brushfiresfoundation.org, and you can get the full copy of the report. We also have a shorter version, just the highlights, and that's free for anyone to download and take a look at. And we'd certainly love if pastors and other church leaders would take a look at that, and maybe it would be inspiring to them to start talking about these issues a little more openly and honestly in our churches.
All right. Our guest has been Daniel Weiss, founder and president of the Brush Fires Foundation. And again, you can find out more about this information to download this report. Give the website again. I don't want to give the wrong website, Daniel.
Yeah, it's brushfiresfoundation.org.
All right. Daniel, thank you so much for being our guest. Thank you for what you guys do.
Well, thank you so much for what you do, and it was a pleasure to be with you today.
All right.
All righty. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
AFA, by the way, was one of the co-sponsors of this research and thus this report, because we realize the sexual revolution is a huge issue facing the church in America and thus our culture. So,
what was the main point of that the findings there that you got from him?
Well, the pastors are more frequently now coming across this issues of sexual dysfunction, and the Bible calls a lot of this sin. And
hasn't this been around since the dawn of humanity?
It has, but the church has to know how to minister to it, and it is the cultural views are bleeding into the church.
Yeah.
And if pastors don't start, like you said, raising the biblical standards and teaching about why those biblical standards exist, it's very possible that more and more Christians will be evangelized by the culture rather than the other way around.
Give me one or two examples of what you're talking about.
Well, he was mentioning the fact that 70% of pastors that were interviewed, this is by Barna, so our listeners are familiar with the Barna organization, have had members of the congregation come to discuss struggles with pornography.
Okay.
80% have had members of their congregation come and discuss marital infidelity. So, but issues of
80%.
Pastors have had.
Oh, okay.
A member of the congregation.
Well, that's not probably not. And yeah, 80. That doesn't surprise me. Over the, especially if you're a pastor for two or three decades.
I mean, right.
You're going to run into adultery.
Right, but these pastors aren't. They don't feel comfortable. They don't feel knowledgeable enough to deal with them. Mm-hmm. To deal with these issues. Maybe not adultery, probably is an exception, but things like pornography and addiction and homosexuality, questions about gender, all these kinds of issues, they feel less and less able to handle it. So the church and the pastors have to get kind of up to speed.
Well, it's the culture in which we live that has become accepting of this sin.
Right.
You know, going back to when I was a kid growing up in church, there wasn't a need every Sunday for the pastor to talk about homosexuality.
Right.
Because in the culture that you lived in, it was frowned upon.
Right.
And it was recognized as abnormal. And so the culture frowned upon that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Today we live in a culture that wants to celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and plus to Daniel Weiss, he's the president and founder of Brush Fires Ministries, to his point as well, the assumption was that Christians in the church are living according to the biblical standards. And that assumption is proving inaccurate. And Christians oftentimes, because they're so biblically illiterate, they oftentimes don't know. What do you mean I can't shack up?
Yeah.
You know, everybody does it. Mm. Well, you're a Christian. Well, what does that mean? What does that got to do with it? And that, and so because we have not address these issues, the many in the church don't know really what the Bible teaches.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. It's simple and yet complicated at the same time. And I would just say don't do it. Huh?
Well.
Pornography, just don't do it. Adultery, shacking up, just don't do it. What's your next question?
Okay.
Is that a good? Well, am I a good counselor?
Well,
Fred, what do you think?
Well,
no.
take them to Scripture and says this is God's word. God hasn't changed His mind. You call yourself a Christian, therefore it applies to you.
Okay.
Yeah, if you don't know that,
well,
then you're not. I question whether you're a Christian or not.
Well,
take you reading too long the Bible to understand there are moral standards you have to live by once you. Follow Christ.
Okay, guys.
Okay.
But here's the thing, all right? You go to Galatians chapter 5, where it talks about the flesh and the spirit. And so what does it mean to walk? What does walking in the flesh mean? What is walking according to the spirit? That is a struggle for everybody who's a Christian. I think what Daniel Weiss is saying, what I believe, is the church has to show how that battle is also applicable in the sexual struggles that people have. You've got to teach people about sanctification and how to walk in a manner that honors the Lord. You do say don't do it, but I think what Christians want to know is how. How do I not do it?
I got you. I also don't think that that's completely fair to throw that all on a pastor.
Well, that's true as well.
Huh?
I think ministries.
You need 10 people coming to you telling you they got problems, and you're trying to study for your sermon on Sunday.
Right.
And you got three kids at home. You're going to your kid's ball game, and you're supposed to take a call at 11 o'clock. Three nights a week about some guy with an addiction problem.
Right.
I think that may sound unsympathetic, I don't mean to sound that way. I'm
as
just saying,
as a pastor, that is very sympathetic, and it is, and it's true. And what these pastors are saying, I think, is where they're going to need parachurch ministries to come in and help instruct Christians. You know, look, most young people got married, you know, 50, 60 years ago before they were 22.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're waiting till they're 27, 28, 29. That's a long time to remain sexually chaste. They're going to have instruction on
right.
how do I live
right.
as a Christian in a over-sexualized world.
I agree.
Help me. And pastors are going to have people they can bring in to help with that, I think. I think that's what this
yeah.
report is going to
I understand.
Show.
No, the as I said, simple answers sometimes, but they are complex issues. You know, dealing with human sexuality and the sin part of that has been
right.
a problem, as I say, going back to the Bible.
Right.
But that doesn't make it any lesser a temptation for people today, probably more so with pornography.
And they need people to help them with their walk. Rather than people, you know, someone saying to a guy let's say a young man says, I'm struggling with pornography. He's going to need men to say, oh, we're going to walk with you
right,
through this.
Right.
And right now, they're not getting, right now, the church is silent or they feel shame.
Gotcha.
So they're not getting help.
Well, shame's a good thing.
If it leads you to help. Yeah, if it leads you to get right with God.
But is shame not a good thing?
Well, if you never find any relief, if no one tells you, bring your guilt and shame to Christ, here's what you do. You need to confess, those kind of things.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo's in the Bible, right?
Well, according to...
Isn't it in Philippians? Doesn't it say... Doesn't the answer...
Is bingo!
Bingo? You just bingoed?
Yeah.
I'm just... I didn't mean to sound flippant. I was setting the table there for Ed to answer a question biblically, and you're
yes.
right. So there is a place for shame.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We need to feel shame when we've done something wrong.
Yes.
True? It's a good thing.
That's biblical.
Because it leads us to repentance.
Right.
Shame. Because we feel guilt. But at the same time... You shouldn't carry that with you 24/7 every day, because there is relief from shame and guilt, and that's forgiveness
yes.
through Christ.
Through Christ.
And a good relationship with your fellow brothers and sisters,
right.
including your wife and your children and everything like
that's
that.
That's right.
So there you go.
A little Bible study
people
right
I
there.
Some people say I sound like Dr. Phil. I do get that.
Do you?
Yeah, about two times a year.
Somebody Does he sound like Dr. Phil?
You know who you remind me of when I hear you? You sound like Dr. Phil. And when I hear Dr. Phil, I'm hearing a whole lot.
I forget what he said.
He sounds like a psychologist redneck combo. Have you never heard Dr. Phil?
I have. I just can't recall the
anyway,
cadence. And
I don't know. All right. So
see if I can get a Dr. Phil.
He may be a wonderful man for all I know. I'm not putting him down. I'm just saying if you hear him talk, you know, he just sounds, doesn't sound like he's PhD material, but he is. But he is, and he's a television celebrity. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We want to visit now with our guest, Michael Gardner. Michael is Senior Director of Communications for Christian Care Ministries. You've heard us talk about that. You've heard the promotions here on American Family Radio. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm doing great this morning. How about you?
You know, you sound like somebody.
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil. You sound like a Yankee version of Dr. Phil right there. tell us about your ministry, Michael.
Sure. So Christian Care Ministry is the home of the MediShare program. This is actually our 25th year, so this program has been around for the past 25 years. And in effect, what it is it's a community of believers who come together and share one another's healthcare burdens voluntarily. So we take our motivation from the early church that we see described in the book of Acts, where the believers came together, shared things in common, and their needs were met. And that's what we try to do every single day here, because you know, the reason, I think a lot of people hear about MediShare and think it's some sort of a low-cost Christian health insurance company, and that's not at all the case. You know, the real reason we exist is to help folks in the faith community and to help pastors and churches because we're hearing from people and from pastors too that, you know, our church is called to do certain things, and we can't make that happen because we're spending so much on healthcare. And so that's really where we want to come in, is to let churches and let individuals and families live out their calling. And one of the ways we can help them do that is by making their healthcare more affordable, so they can take that savings and, you know, do what God calls them to do in their family or their church or their local community.
Hey, are you the voice on the commercials?
I am not the voice on the commercials.
Okay. Well, you sound similar to the guy who does the commercials for you folks. So you are or aren't insurance?
No, we are not insurance at all. This is quite different. It's a whole different animal. You know, our members, we have 400,000 members now all across the country, and every month they come together and share each other's medical bills. So I can give you a personal example, because my family, my wife, myself, and our two kids are all on MediShare. And so what happens with MediShare is every month we make a deposit into a sharing account. And it's important to understand that money that we pay into our sharing account is not used for our own healthcare expenses. Instead, it's what's used to be shared with other members. So I know that money I'm putting in there every month is going to be shared with other families in need. At the same time, if I need health care, I'm going to pay for my health care up into a certain amount that we call your annual household portion. And that's the amount of financial resources that you can commit for your own family before you ask the other members to come alongside you. So there are different levels people can choose from to help tailor this to their family, their budget, their specific needs. In our case, we've chosen the $10,500 version. So we know what that means is that we're going to pay every penny of our medical bills up to $10,500 before members come alongside us and share in our medical needs.
Like a deductible.
It's similar to that. It's for your entire family. So for our purposes, you know, our membership levels are one person, two people, or three or more is a family. So if you have five kids, six kids, seven kids, and we have members who do, you know, all of the people's medical expenses in the household are going to count towards that amount. So it's a little bit different in that sense.
What's your website? How do people find out more about you?
The best place to go is MediShare.com.
Spell that out.
MediShare, all one word, .com. And there's information there about, you know, people can actually put in their particular family situation and see, you know, what the cost would be for them. And we always have folks standing by on the phones, too, who can answer questions, because this is quite different from insurance. You know, there are a couple key differences between what people might be used to and the way MediShare works. And we want to make sure people make the best decision for their family. Okay. So there are always people here who can answer those questions.
I know a lot of people, a lot of listeners right now of ours are members of your organization. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, too, Bo. What do you do? Let's say you have, middle of the night, you have to go to the emergency room at the hospital, mm-hmm. and you walk up and, somebody's got some kind of a sickness in your family, mm-hmm. and they say, can you show me your insurance card, please, sir? And you go, well, I don't have insurance. I have MediShare.
Right.
Do they look at you like you have three heads or what?
No, you still have a card. That's the good thing. You have a membership card. So when you have a need, the way that it works is you go find a provider, and we do give our members access to a nationwide network of providers. And so, you know, we have arrangements with that network of providers, so our members will receive discount on their care. It's going to be the lowest out-of-pocket cost if you choose a provider from that network. But the one thing that's really important for people to know is that you can see any provider that you want to see.
Okay.
But your cost is going to be lower if you choose. So, you know, you go to your provider, you show your membership card, you pay a small provider fee, and then you get the care you need. And then the provider sends the bills to MediShare, and that's where we come into play. We do the rest.
And hospitals are running into this more and more, so they're getting more familiar with
mm-hmm. hospitals, providers, our network providers. Has, you know, specialists and labs and imaging centers, that sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thank you, my friend. Appreciate you being on with us, Michael. God bless you,
thank
brother.
You.
Take care.
You too. Thank you so much for the time.
Okay, Michael Gardner, Senior Director of Communications for Christian Care Ministries. Thank you, Fred.
Very good to be here.
For your contributions. Mm-hmm. Ed and I will be back with Steve Jordahl momentarily. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.